Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects! It's Nick, myself, the mastermind behind the operation, Barry Laminack, the polished broadcaster that he is. Before the break, we were talking about a potential deal that would have brought Rick Smits, Steve Stepanovich, and Detlef Schrempf to the Rockets in a
made you are such a jerk
for years that didn't actually go through. But Barry has all the details, and he wanted to make sure that he brought it to you so that you guys could contemplate.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I should have never joked with you about that.
You? No.
What? That's pretty crazy, though, that I stumbled across this article on Bro Bible, and it talked about the fact that back in the day, and this was all based on Dream's book, Living the Dream. So Olajuwon wrote a book called Living the Dream, and apparently this was an excerpt from the book where he said that at one point there was a discussion that there was a trade offered to the Rockets. So this isn't the Rockets going out and looking for the trade. The Blazers came to the Rockets and said, we'll give you Clyde and the number two pick in next year's draft. So this is in 83. We'll give you Clyde and the number two pick in 84 for Ralph Sampson. Which, it now in 2020, you look at that and go, what? That's not even a fair trade. But you got to remember, at the time, it was a big man's league, and Ralph Sampson was a really good big man in the NBA. And people thought you could build around him, hence the Twin Towers and everything else. So if that would have happened, then obviously the Rockets would have still had Olajuwon because they drafted him in 84. They would have drafted Jordan number two because they wouldn't have needed Sam Bowie as another big man, and they would have had Clyde already. So you would have had a Houston Rockets team of Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, Michael Jordan. You really wouldn't even need anybody else. You could just go 3-on-5.
Well, and you know what, Barry? It might have changed the complexion of the league like the Warriors did going small ball. Mm-hmm. When you can put that much talent on the floor in 3 of the 5 starting positions.
Oh, man.
And it's effective. Now it's a copycat league, and now suddenly teams are going, well, we'll keep our center because at least, you know, we need someone to guard Dream. But now instead of going with all those big men in the power forward that was always the big 6'10", you know, muscle guy that hit the boards, now maybe you're right. Maybe other teams start streamlining too, going in order to match up with them, we got to have smaller, quicker, more athletic guys than big guys that crowd the paint.
Well, the other thing, and they mentioned it in the article a little bit, but it's worth contemplating, is how much does it change each of their careers? There's no doubt, because it was crazy. It said from 91 to 98, every NBA champion either included Jordan or Olajuwon.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Well,
two
of Olajuwon, yeah, and the rest of them were all MJ.
But yeah. Drexler, Jordan, Olajuwon were involved in finals from 90 to 98. So you would have had – so those three guys were involved in all the finals from 90 to 98 in some form or fashion. But think about – because now you're not Jordan. Yeah, you have Pippen. But imagine Jordan and you have to share the ball with Drexler and Olajuwon. Because, you know, you got to feed Olajuwon. That – back in the day, and we talked about Rudy being an innovator of the spread four and shooting, you know, Robert Horry shooting
inside
three.
Out, yeah.
Yeah, that inside out, that Jordan wouldn't have played an inside out game. I mean, that's why they had guys like Bill Cartwright. His job was
to be a
defender, and that wasn't an inside out game. That was a create off the dribble
game. You bring
up
an interesting point.
And Clyde was the same way.
you're making that judgment based on how their careers went. But if you go back, because it's an interesting discussion, because if you take it from the scenario that you're painting, Jordan comes out of Dean Smith's North Carolina system. So he was a team player, and he was all about playing team basketball. And that's the way he was trained at Carolina. Take that and you say, okay, Clyde and Dream played together. Yes, they just want to play up-tempo. But I think you're right. I don't think maybe we see Michael Jordan at the end of his career as the greatest single player in the history of the game, but I think maybe you see a team that creates more opportunities to win more championships, and maybe whether if they played in Houston or wherever they were playing, that squad would have more titles and be more legendary for what they accomplished as a team. But maybe it was because each guy never got the chance to, because remember now, Clyde struggled with a lot of bad Portland teams. That's how he became the man. Dream did the same thing early on when he became the man with the Rockets. Michael did the same thing with the Bulls. But what I'm saying is Dream was easily a team player because he also got winded a lot too because he was always on the court and doing things defensively to where he would have been fine. Jordan would have played team ball. Clyde would have just pushed the tempo and gotten up and down. Clyde maybe would have gotten more because he was the most individualistic of the three from a college perspective and the one that was more free to roam.
I think all three of their career numbers would have been down because if you're sharing the ball with three prolific scorers like that. Now, could you imagine defensively what that team would have been like? Oh, boy. That's just crazy. And you think it, because I mean, both Dream and Jordan are elite defenders too.
No doubt.
So yeah, defensively it would have been, and Clyde was decent. I mean, Clyde's not a great defender, but he was good. Does he go down as the greatest of all time? Does Dream go down as one of the greatest centers of all time if they're all sharing the ball like that?
Well, but think about it. So let's just think about the Celtics for one opportunity to take a look at that, or even the Lakers. James Worthy's a Hall of Fame player. James Worthy played at Carolina like Jordan and played in a team system the whole time. They won, and therefore he's regarded as one of the best power forwards. And his numbers weren't the best of all time at his position, but they were really good. Same thing with Magic. Same thing with
I see the point you're making, but that's what I'm saying. If James Worthy would have played in Chicago with Jordan and that's it, if James Worthy was Jordan's Pippen, don't you think he would have averaged more than 17 or 17.6 a game? I think so.
Probably,
he's the number
two
behind Jordan, but he wasn't. And so that's what I mean. One of those three guys would have had to play second fiddle to the other one. I mean, two of those guys would have had to play second fiddle.
Honestly, and this may be in the minority in terms of what people think, and they're going to base a lot of it on what Michael's career ended up being. I think in that scenario, Jordan's the guy. I mean, Clyde's the guy that gets the most points and is the most individualistic of the three in terms of career numbers and all those other things because of the way he played his whole career, whereas Jordan played in a system. Dream was fine. He didn't seem to demand the ball or the limelight. And I think Clyde would have been the guy that would have been out in front of the other two guys.
I'll disagree for one reason and one reason only. Because it was a big man's league. And you featured the big man. And you had one of the best. And I think that you could – Jordan was a creator. But he could also create shots for other people. When you think of some of the big shots in Bulls history with Jordan, it wasn't always him taking it. There were other guys that took big shots for that team. You know, and Clyde
Jackson
obviously
and Kerr
was,
and
but Clyde was a creator too, and I think that they end up in that era, they end up creating more for Olajuwon and giving him space, and knowing that look, you can't leave Jordan, and you couldn't leave Clyde if Dream, you have got to stay on them. That creates
but Barry,
a lot
think
more
about
room
this.
For Dream.
The
to
other
work.
Thing,
I think he would be
based on
the guy that would benefit.
Your comment
the most.
Earlier. About the stretch fours and the outside inside out Rudy offense. The big problem you have there is you're going to have to get shooters because you got Michael and Clyde, and the weakness in both of their games, if they had one, was outside shooting, especially from three. And we talked about that with Jordan after the first two episodes of The Last Dance. So then, if you're going to run that kind of offense, Rudy would have to retailer his offense, and maybe we never see the inside-out game. Maybe we see more of a five-slam-a-jamma where they're constantly just getting up and down, and they're playing at breakneck speed, and they're pushing the tempo throughout. And then maybe it's a totally different ball game from that regard as well, where Rudy changed his style and adapted to his players, and it created a whole – but I think I really legitimately think you would have had a dynasty.
Oh, boy. Now, I do. You would have had a dynasty for a couple years, because now, remember, 84 was the first year of the cap. So you got to pay all three of those guys too. And I think that would have been the downfall of the dynasty, because kind of like what happened with Pippen, sixth highest paid bull, because they had other guys they had to pay, and for whatever reason, I guess Krause didn't like Pippen or whatever, but you could see a scenario where there was going to be an odd man out, and you have to think, well, I don't know, cuz I was going to say you have to think it would be Clyde, right? Because you have Jordan and it's a big man's league, so you're keeping Olajuwon. But with the relationship that Dream and Clyde had,
Dream's not going to allow Clyde to be traded.
But who's going to be the one that doesn't keep Michael Jordan though? Are you going to
be that
guy?
Well, but here's the thing: if Michael is that, I think the other thing is what you see in a lot. The complacency sets in with a lot of dynasties or teams that win, even with Golden State and teams like that. At a certain point, you're either going to you're right. You're going to have to pay him. And may probably overpay a guy that didn't deserve it. But in the case of that team, it would have been Michael going, you know what? I've won my championships. I've got enough. But I feel like I'm only tapping into about 50% of what I could be bringing to the table. I'm going to go for a new challenge. I'm going to go somewhere else, win on my own, and show how great I can be. I could see Michael doing that once he got titles and success early on. But that's an interesting scenario to kick around. So. All right, with that, if you want to get in on the discussion, we're here for you. 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. Call that number, text that number, or hit us on Twitter with something you want to talk about. It is the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Sam Windsor with the Houston Sabercats here. Even when I'm down under, I'm listening to ESPN 97.5 on the app. You can stream the boys from anywhere. Mate.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, welcome back to The Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on the day of the first round of the NFL draft starting this evening right here on ESPN 97.5. Interesting little article Barry stumbled on that has gotten people to talk and be a little bit interested in possible scenarios and what ifs, and boy, the Rockets could have been one hell of a dynasty if they had done things just a little differently in 83-84. And you're right, Barry, from the standpoint of thinking about it from Ralph Sampson, again, we're passing all this judgment and we're making all these opinions based on how their careers ended up. But people forget, coming out of Virginia, Ralph Sampson was the man. He was the player of the year in college basketball. He was, everybody said, well, he was too thin. No, his knees did him in, because at the University of Virginia, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was the only guy, football, basketball, or otherwise, at the University of Virginia that could curl with one-handed dumbbells, 90 and 100-pound dumbbells in each arm. I mean, dude was strong. He was athletic. He was versatile. And, again, aside from technology not being what it is today in terms of his knee injuries and what he went through, that guy was unbelievable for a small window of time in basketball.
Yep. People forget that. They really do.
Yeah. So it's fun sometimes to kind of kick around the what-ifs and the possibilities because, as much as we know how everything did turn out, and with the obviously we're going through it with the Bulls and Jordan, and we saw that window with the Rockets, but when you really get in depth in terms of what changes, because we both said it was a big man's league for a long time, it's just kind of fun to contemplate. It could have all changed. You know, the same way that Rudy created a system that would end up being prevalent but even have more longevity than people could have thought when indeed the game got away from a big man's game. But he doesn't get enough credit for creating that small ball or, you know, small ball around one big man inside-out game and then having big shoot threes, which is now the way the game is played. People thought he was nuts when he did that back then.
Oh, yeah.
Could have changed depending on personnel.
Anytime you're an innovator, you're going to be labeled a crazy person. Anytime you come up with a different way that goes against the norm, people think, that's insane. Why would you have a big, long, you know, long-armed guy like Robert Horry standing behind the three-point line shooting threes? Put him down low. He can defend. He can rebound. You know, he shouldn't be playing on the perimeter. That's crazy talk. And now everybody's like, why would you put that guy down low? Teach him how to shoot threes and spread the floor. So, yeah, I mean, Rudy obviously isn't going to get the credit that he deserves and was probably a crazy man. And the same thing, Samson, he's one of those guys that you never hear mentioned, but you're right. Dude was a stud coming out of college. And
nobody had answers for that guy.
Probably one of the greatest college basketball players ever. If you were making a list, I mean, he's not going to be top three or five, I don't think. We did that not too long ago, I believe. But he would be on the lists in top 20-ish easily.
Of all time
college basketball players, he's on the top 20.
The only knock on him was they didn't win at all. But, I mean, he was player of the year or up for player of the year his entire time at Virginia. He had good teams with, you know, quality role players surrounding him. And there weren't many players like him. Like, most seven-footers were going to be, you know, very strong, very thick players that just stuck their butt on the low block and stayed there. Ralph could run the floor. He could handle the ball. You know, he was athletic, strong. So, yeah, he could have changed the game in a lot of ways, too, had he not had his career cut short by all the knee injuries. So, yeah. Interesting scenarios abound. I was also curious in that scenario that you painted about the role players that were already there that would have filled out the rest of the roster for the Rockets, because, you know, you would still need guys that were able to play their role. Like we said, you're going to need a couple of shooters. Probably going to need at least one guy that doesn't want the ball but can rebound his ass off. You know, ideally you want an Otis Thorpe type on that team. Or a Robert Horry type, a versatile guy that can play down low and defend but can shoot the three and can finish on the break. Those were the kind of role players that would have really put the finishing touches on that team. But
A Matt Bullard would have been –
Yep.
I mean, he would have been perfect. I don't know that you could afford Otis Thorpe because, you know, he was making – especially because you got to remember now, you got the salary cap in 84, so you could probably fade those – having those three stars because they're – you know, Olajuwon and Jordan would be rookies – and Clyde would be in year two, but you're probably not going to be able to build,
long
term.
So I looked
with
it up.
Those guys.
So here's your 83-84 Rockets roster before these trades would have taken place, and you would have done what the other things you needed to do. Craig Elo would have been a guy perfect for that team because he was a shooter. Elvin Hayes was still on that team.
Oh, man. That's not a bad backup.
So you had – no, you had Allen Level, a good shooter and a versatile guard.
Big Allen Level fan.
So some of the guys that would have fit in regardless, because Samson and Elvin actually played that 1 year together. But you had James
Bailey. Was Roby Free still there, or was he already gone?
It was already gone. So you had James Bailey, Craig Elo, Phil Ford, Elvin Hayes – Caldwell Jones and his brother Major Jones, Allen Level, Lou Lloyd. Boy, Lou Lloyd, if he could have just stayed clean and run the break.
Man.
Rodney McRae, Robert Reed, Ralph Sampson, Terry Teagle, Wally Walker.
Okay.
Now that's 83-84, so that's where
Lou
Clyde,
Lloyd would have been ridiculous with that three. Golly.
Well, there's another guy that because of what we got into drug-wise, people lost sight of what an athlete he was on the break and just on both ends of the floor. So,
by the way, I just looked real quick because I used to love World Be Free with that big old arcing jump shot of his. But he was actually – his last year in the league was Houston, so it was 87-88. I don't know why I thought it was prior to 84. But, yeah, 87-88, World Be Free played for the – his last year played for the Rockets. Loved watching that dude shoot that big old arc.
He had the best form and fundamentally just textbook form. He and Kenny Smith. Now, 82-83, Murph was still on that team.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm thinking 83-84, then 84-85 would have been the 2 years when you were talking when they would have been constructing those trades. Uh-huh. So, because I thought that Rodney McRae was the same draft as Clyde, was it not? Because I think that they could have had Clyde, but went Rodney McRae instead.
Let me see. Rodney McRae. He was drafted in... Where the heck did it go? 83 NBA draft. Third pick overall.
And I think they took him instead of taking Clyde.
Well, yeah, because they took Ralph at one and Rodney McRae at three. Boy,
at three. And so I think they passed on Clyde.
Well, Clyde didn't go till 14, so a lot of folks passed on Clyde.
Yep.
Which is crazy. But, yeah, Ralph Sampson at one, Rodney McRae at three. And then you got to remember, the Rockets would have had one and two in the next draft.
They got
Ralph Sampson in 83 and Olajuwon in 84. With Rodney McRae, they could have had Jordan and then added Drexler to that mix.
That's crazy.
That's crazy talk.
Boy, I'm telling you what.
Giving up Ralph Sampson. Man.
But think about how it would have changed history. In my mind, that was enough talent to change history to where you had all that talent on one roster. It would have been fun to see what they could have done. Because would have absolutely – I mean, you talk about defenses that would have been stuck in the mud and back on their heels.
Yeah.
It was one thing to watch Five Slamma Jamma in college, but then replace guys, you know, just like the point guards on the Five Slamma Jamma teams, or a Benny Anders with a Michael Jordan and like a Lou Lloyd, and be like, whoo, wow, now you want to talk about above-the-rim finishes on the break, and you got an anchor like Akeem? Man.
Now, what's crazy is – Clyde was the highest out of that draft of 83. Clyde obviously ended his career with the most points per game, averaging 20.4. I don't think I could read you the whole list of the top 25 picks in this draft. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you would guess who was second. It wasn't Sampson. And I'm talking points per game for their career. It doesn't matter, you know. I mean, Byron Scott was in that draft. Rodney McRae was in that draft. Dale Ellis was in that draft. Jeff Malone, Derek Harper. You know, you had Clyde, obviously. Jeff Malone was the second highest.
I was just
going to
say, Jeff Malone was a scorer, man,
at
with the Jets.
19 a game.
Yeah.
You would have never guessed that. I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have guessed that because you had Byron
Scott.
Don't
sell me short. The minute you mentioned his name, I was like, wait a minute, because I'm thinking about guys that weren't on great teams but that put up numbers. Dale Ellis because of the three ball. Yep. Jeff Malone because of the fact that he didn't have a lot of help. Woo, he can shoot it.
I hated Dale Ellis off the court in Seattle when he was averaging 25, 27 a game. Oh, I hated him so much. Yeah. He was so good.
That's part of that just that whole Sonics-Rockets rivalry that made you hate.
Well, and it was because it was weird because the Sonics kind of went – the Sonics would be a good team if they played now because they were a stretch-the-floor run. They didn't care about the big man as much. I mean, I think they had Sam Perkins, was it? But he was a three-ball shooter.
Smooth.
He was a big man that shot the three.
Yeah.
So they were a modern-day.
The Rain Man.
Yep.
Man,
you had Kemp
Seattle.
And Ellis and Gary Payton. And,
Detlef.
Yep.
Yeah, there were some good teams in Seattle there. You're right. It would have fit really well in today's game. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. We fit well in today's game. We got plenty more show to get to, too. We're at the midway point. So 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show comes up next. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 in the books, 90 still to go. It's the second half of the show, so good afternoon to suspects and anybody not from Columbus, Ohio, in the 614.
Uh-oh.
As we roll with the second.
Yeah, I hadn't been in the text. What happened?
Well, you know, it's just certain people just feel like that they're going to be belligerently idiotic, and other people are just randomly getting into discussions, so it's good.
Oh.
Jason tweeted in and said, Rudy also ran motion offense when Dream sat down. It's a good point. I think a lot of people, and obviously Rudy's going to get his due now that he's going into the Hall of Fame, but I think the other thing is people don't realize that it wasn't just Rudy capitalizing on having Hakeem Olajuwon and then winning the titles. Rudy's basketball mind was, I think, sold short by a lot of people because mm-hmm. they just took for granted saying that he, like Guy B. Lewis, I think both of those guys actually were punished by the fact that they had one of the greatest to ever play the center position. But when you think about just a true basketball mind, Guy B. had to decide to play up-tempo and had to play a certain way to maximize what he had. Rudy maximized the fact that he didn't have one of those dominating teams like the Lakers and the Celtics or the Bulls back in the day. So he just made sure that he constructed offensive systems to maximize the players he did have. And I think Rudy should get more credit than he gets in terms of being a basketball mind.
For sure. For sure.
So, Nick came up with something that I was not aware of when you and I had been talking about this whole Last Dance and obviously the Bulls and their rivals and things like that. But one of the things that I hope they cover at some point, but the Pistons were the number one rival for the Bulls to get out of the East. But then after a while, there was a good solid rivalry between the Pacers and the Bulls and the same division and Reggie Miller and Jordan and all those things. And Reggie Miller was on Dan Patrick's show recently, and he had a lot to say. And Reggie Miller, not the strongest guy in the world by any means, because he wasn't the most physically intimidating, but he claims he'd punch Michael Jordan if he saw him in public today.
What would you say if you sat down with him? Like, let's say we went to dinner, and then you see MJ.
I might punch him.
No, you...
I don't know. I don't know. Again,
are you being serious? Are you that? Would you be? You'd have different emotions.
Man, there was a lot of stuff being thrown back and forth. I respect the heck out of that dude. The greatest. I mean, he's the greatest. But
what's the one thing he said that you can't let go? Can you tell me?
It's not so. It's just. It just hurts because when you feel. I just felt we should have ended them in 97, that season. The one that, you know, they had the crew. I felt we were the better team. And it just pains me and hurts. It hurts me.
So, and there's a couple more from Reggie. But because we obviously don't get Michael's quotes because he doesn't talk like Reggie does. Michael in 98 said of Reggie Miller, I don't really dislike anybody in the league, but playing Reggie Miller drives me nuts. It's like chicken fighting with a woman. His game is all this flopping type thing. He weighs 185, so you have to be careful. Don't touch him or it's a foul. On offense, I use all my 215 pounds and just move him out, but he has his hands on you all the time like a woman holding your waist. I just want to beat his hands off because it's illegal. It irritates me.
A lot of subliminal messages in there, huh?
You think?
You think? Yeah, a little bit. Maybe implying that he felt like Reggie was a little effeminate, maybe?
Well, and he was a very skinny, slight of build, but he was a hell of a player, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, you forget how often those two teams did end up squaring off and had some great series. But Reggie also was a notorious trash talker. Look, it wasn't just Reggie and Michael. I mean, we saw in the series about how Pippen was on the block and Krause was thinking about trading him. Well, Reggie was a guy like Gary Payton, where you give him an inch, he's going to take a mile, he's going to drive it home on you. And when he was aware of the fact that they were trying to trade Pippen, and he talked to Dan Patrick about the fact that he let Pippen know.
It's funny, you know, when you hear about the whole Jerry Krause and blowing up the team, you know, people need to understand. He put the team together, too.
Yeah.
He put that championship team together. Now, he blew it up. But it just shows you, and I hope the younger generation understands this, because I tried to use some of that material while we played, you know, especially on Scotty, like, you know, subtly at free throw lines. Man, I can't believe they're trying to get rid of you, dude. Are you kidding? You know, I would use a little bit of that during the game.
That's pretty good.
But that's the thing. I mean, I think, you know, you and I were talking about it, Barry, the other day when we were talking about how MJ had that has that kind of personality that would fly with us at the station behind the scenes. But because of everything in society today, it wouldn't fly anymore in terms of anywhere where there's media or anybody within earshot of you know, how you give someone a ribbing. But, you know, when you think about that, Gary Payton was a guy, too. If he knew something about your private life, you know, nothing was off limits. I mean, Bird was kind of that way, too. From all the indications, the stories I've heard, too, Bird was another guy that there wasn't anything off limits in the way they talk crap to you.
I mean, Bird was all world at trash talking. He is up there. He was Gary Payton level trash talk. Like, he was... he used to tell people what he would do. I think there was one story where he said something to the effect of he was playing, but he said, listen, there was like 6 seconds left in the game, tie game. He said, I'm going to cut baseline. They're going to feed me the ball. I'm going to turn around towards the baseline and make this fading away. And that's exactly what he did. And then he walked off and went, told you, after he sunk the shot and won the game. Like, bro, that's just like that kind of trash talk. What do you do? Like, that's got to be so frustrating because there's literally nothing you can do when guys are that good and trash talk you and you can't stop them. And it's God, that I see why Reggie Miller would want to punch Michael Jordan, because I'm sure Jordan trash talked him to no end about the way he played. And Reggie, nothing he could do about it. Couldn't beat him.
Well, think about it, and you mentioned Bird, but think about the legendary win in the three-point contest when, one, he never took off his warm-up. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is shooting in their jerseys. He never took up his warm-up. And then on the final shot, which he needed to win, the minute it left his hand, he put the number one signal in the air and turned his back on the ball and walked away before it even went through the hoop.
Yeah.
He was an assassin, man.
Crazy.
And the stories that you hear, boy, I'm seriously – nothing was more enjoyable to me than when Kevin McHale's time with the Rockets, you'd be sitting in his office and he'd just start telling Bird stories and Celtic stories. And you just sat there and you just shook your head going, I mean, dude was pretty incredible with some of the stuff that, I mean, I think I've told you this before, but, you know, they were flying commercial and the coaches were, you know, there was no iPads and computers. Coaches would spend like an hour writing on the whiteboard the whole game plan and the defensive tendencies of the other team and offensive, all these other things. And there were times, McHale said, that they got caught at the airport. They got to the building late. The coaches were scrambling. The players went out and got shots up real quick while like two assistant coaches wrote like a novel on the whiteboard. And Bird would come back in and take a towel, wipe the whole whiteboard down, and every coach was just both livid and in shock of what he was doing. And he'd just turn around and go, we've had a BS type day. Let's just go out and kick their asses and get out of this crap hole town. And McHale said, there wasn't a guy in the room that didn't want to run their head through a wall and go do whatever it took to win because it was Larry Bird.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy, man. Another legend, Larry Legend.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that I've noticed in watching some of the old games again, is that I don't know that Bird gets enough credit for his crafty athleticism, his passing.
Yeah, God, you got to love it. Old slow, or not old, but a slow white guy. Always.
Well, that was the knock too, right? Everybody thought he was too slow.
Yeah.
Or he couldn't jump, and then I see him dunking, and I'm like, and like off the on the run, dunking, going over people. Well, okay, well, early Bird had a little spring to his step.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was...
he's definitely one of the best of all time, but you never hear him mentioned. But Bird and Magic saved the NBA, baby.
Man, his court vision, someone put out there on Twitter last night just some of the greatest passes, no-look passes.
Uh-huh.
When they talk about eyes in the back of your head and knowing where people were on the floor, it's crazy the way Bird used to see the floor for a big man. So You know, it's one of those things. Back in the day, I don't want to reminisce because, of course, everybody is caught up now in the fact that we're not playing hoops. And Chris Paul is out there. Did you see that? He said that because there was a lot of people that were kicking it around saying, you know, how long it would take for the season to get started. Chris Paul, obviously, in charge of the Players Association as the number one, I think he's the president of the Players Association. He said if there's any talk of getting the NBA started again, minimum 3 to 4 weeks for the players to get ready and get in shape and be prepared for the season. So even if the NBA picks a date, they better have a good amount of time set up for people, you know, the players to get back in shape and play again, because he's saying that from a Players Association perspective, they're not going out there unless they're ready, and it could take an extra month.
Well, I mean, that's not something, a sport like that isn't something you can, this ain't chess, it ain't bowling. They need to get back in shape and get back into game form and practice and try to get the chemistry back. So, makes sense.
Yeah, yep. Also, a friend of mine that on the Astros TV crew just put something out there that will not be some of the best news you've heard all day, Mr. Laminack. So I can share that with you when we get back from the break, as well as other things. So if you want to join us, 713-780-3776. That's our HRNP listener line to call, text, hit us on Twitter. And another reminder, real quick, before we go to break, we are the home of the NFL draft on ESPN 97.5. So we want to make sure that you listen. Starting tonight, a preempted blitz so that the first round can get underway at 6 p.m. Tomorrow, 5 p.m., blitz cut short only after an hour so that we can get you the continuation of the draft. Then Saturday, starting at noon all day, all brought to you by Rexel. RexelUSA.com can give you more about their services, but thanks to Rexel USA, the NFL draft coverage will be abound, and you're home for the NFL draft, ESPN 97.5. Back with more in just a few minutes, ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go, rolling through. Second hour of the show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Always a pleasure when it is the originals, Barry, Nick, and Joel on the schedule and on the show, as we've been talking a lot about football in the draft tonight. Talked a little basketball. Got a little baseball for you, Barry. See a couple of posts from my friends on the TV crew of the Astros. Unfortunately, it looks as if all games on their schedules have been scrapped through May.
Oof.
Which means regardless of whatever you're hearing about, if they're going to do these regional sites, including both Arlington and Houston for a Texas center hub for at least a portion of the games, if they do this whole, you know, multiple teams meeting in one location. But regardless, it wouldn't be before June 1. So, I mean, I think it's what our biggest fear is, that with every passing day, instead of getting closer to playing, they're pushing things back more and more. And that is not doing anything for people's sanity and needing sports
even
and wanting
worse,
a distraction.
They continue to postpone Laminex spreadsheet and everything he can break down for you going into the MLB season.
It's a very good point, Nick. Very valid point.
Or they're buying me more time to do it, because I was going to start it, as you guys know, and then all this happened. I was like, well, I guess I'm not doing it. I had to even ask Fred, do you want me to do another one for Sports Map? He's like, yep. So yeah, that's sad news for me. This is a sad day in Laminack Town.
You're gonna have to just play MLB the Show.
Oh yeah, I played last night and streamed it on Twitch, and I played the
How'd
Cheater Bowl. I played the Cheater Bowl. It was
Red Sox Astros.
Yeah, and it didn't go well.
No,
the Red Sox Cheaters won. And it went to extra innings, but I did give up it was either a 3-run jack or a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth. I was devastated. And of course, like Eric Resendez, lots of suspects hop in there on the chat, and we just all talk trash and have a good time. And I was giving my theories on the coronavirus and the Red Sox and all that. Just, it's fun. But oh my God, when something bad happens, and trust me, something bad. I am not good at this, so something bad always happens. And Eric Resendez, that's the only time he'll make a highlight reel is if I do something stupid, and then I'm over here cursing up a storm, and that's the highlight reel. That, and then of course everybody has to roast me, and it's fun. But frustrating. So I can't imagine when I start playing listeners, because I do think I'm going to do that starting in May. Like I said, once a week I'll pick a listener at random, and if you're on the Twitch or whatever, and I'll play them at MLB the Show. So that'll be fun. That's it, though. That's all the baseball we got. Like, I feel like I'm providing a service.
That's true. However, because of what we talked about as breaking news yesterday, the news of the Red Sox. Discipline, if you want to even call it that, and then for us on a call to action, and when I kept saying, look, I want to hear from the baseball aficionados and the longtime, you know, beat writers and all these other guys to say it's not right. Well, thankfully, I got my wish a little bit. I saw Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman get all over it, and they were not happy with the fact that they said a lot of the same things we said. You're telling me a guy that was the bench coach on a team that cheated in 2017 didn't have anything to do, any knowledge of, or implement any cheating the following year when he was the coach of the Red Sox and they won the World Series? BS. The Big Lead came out with a story that said the one thing that it tells them after seeing the punishment of the Red Sox is MLB teams should just keep on cheating because it's not going to cost you that much and the rewards are far better than the risk and if you get caught. And it continues from there. You've got lots of other people. So Mike... AXISA with a blue check mark. But Mike basically was on the same – he writes about baseball for CBS Sports and MLB. And he had another great tweet in terms of talking about just how bad the whole decision was. He said, so the Red Sox cheated in 2017. They got caught, told MLB they wouldn't do it again, then did it again the next year, and that's the punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my exact point. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, we got called homers yesterday, but I'm glad that everybody, that there are other people in the national media bringing it up because, you know, the Astros rightfully so got roasted. The MLB should be roasted. I'm not even mad at the Red Sox, to be honest with you. You knew what they were. They cheated in 2017. They went out and got a coach or a manager that was a cheat. He was a coach at the time, but became a manager that was a cheater. And, I mean, what'd you expect? I'm mad at the MLB because they acted like this wasn't a big deal. Why all of a sudden is it now not a big deal? It was a big deal when the Astros did it, and I get it because it lasted a long time, and it was so involved in so many people. But cheating is cheating. It's like saying, well, Barry Bonds used to use two syringes of steroids, but Brady Anderson only used one. So... Brady gets 10-game suspension. Bond's going to get half a season. They're both using steroids. At that point, what does it matter? How much?
Well, and that's what I said yesterday. Don't base it on Red Sox being compared to what the Astros did in 17. Just base it on did they break the rules or didn't they? And if they did, and they did it cheating, which is exactly what the Astros did, then start making sure that the punishment fits the crime in both cases and it's equal across the board. Because I was going to ask you if you did get a hold of the commissioner's notes yet, or have seen the report, because I have not. We have said we want to see that.
Somebody had texted me, let me find it. It was in my Twitter. Was it? Nope, I don't know where it went. But yeah, somebody had sent me a message that said that I think what it was, it might have been on my Instagram, but I think that if you have the MLB app, that you could have gotten the report by now, but I don't know if it's anywhere else.
So this CBS sports writer, actually, after he made the statement he made about just in disbelief about the fact that the Red Sox cheated twice, said they wouldn't do it again, that the punishment was weak, and quotes the report and says, quote, in assessing the significance of this violation from the Red Sox, the investigation established three relevant points. First, the violation in question occurred without the knowledge of ownership or front office personnel. Second, when the Red Sox learned of the Yankees' complaint, they immediately halted the conduct in question, then cooperated completely in my investigation. I have received absolute assurances from the Red Sox there will be no future violations of this type. BS. Third, our investigation revealed that clubs have employed various strategies to goad signs that do not violate our rules. The Red Sox strategy violated our rules because of the use of an electronic device. So then why aren't they punished like the Astros? Plain and simple. If that's in the report, you're selling yourself out.
Yep.
Man, that's frustrating. You can call us homers or not. I mean, that's just the fact. When you read stuff like that and you know that Rob Manfred is just out there flailing in the wind making decisions based on the fact that there are facts right in front of him, that pisses me off.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Real quick, somebody texted and said, what's Barry's Twitch? I guess they want to watch me curse. It's at Barry is Funny. Everything is that I do online is at Barry is Funny. So if you're ever looking for a YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Twitch, whatever, Discord. I don't even know what the hell Discord is. That's this new thing, this newfangled chat thing. I don't know. All of it's Barry is Funny, though. Is Lisa a little concerned about going to Channel 2 with what happened yesterday, or maybe this morning? I don't remember which one it was. Did you see where they said you had to use a banana mask?
They didn't even say a banana mask. They said it was a homemade banana, which was even more frightening.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Homemade masks. What is it? Homemade masks, sanitizers, and bananas. I don't think you want too much detail or personal experience with the homemade banana. I'm just saying.
Joel, you going out in public with a banana on your face?
No. Hey, by the way, speaking of that, shout out to Missy, friend of the show,
yep,
who made us all masks, delivered them. Of the three of us, there's only one of them that has not yet to find his mailbox and go check it and figure out that they're probably sitting there. But you got yours, Barry.
Hmm? We shot
kind of an inside
yesterday.
Joke.
Yeah,
I know, because she asked me if Nick had gotten his yesterday. Nick was going to check in the mailbox. He's still yet to do that. But I bring it up to say this. Last night, I had to go to the grocery store. So because of the fact that I know we're getting close to this whole having everybody has to wear a mask, I'm like, all right, well, Missy made them. I'll grab one. I end up grabbing we have a running joke because I was a Rockets fan. She was a Spurs fan. So she made me a Spurs mask. I didn't even think twice about it. I put that Spurs mask on and went to the HEB.
Felt dirty.
Dude, I got more stink eye, more evil looks, more like double takes with like the I just farted face. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? And then I finally realized that when I got in the car and took the mask off, I was like, I'll be a dick. I sent her a picture. I go, okay, yeah, you got me. You win. Because just wearing the Spurs mask, man, there's some hatred in this town.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah. I sent her a message and I said, hey, thank you so much. Both Nora and I appreciate you making masks and sending them because, you know, with her being a nurse, it's really helpful. And with me, I'm not out much, but I got to run errands and I've been wearing a bandana and it's weird and it doesn't fit the same. I don't like it. So it's perfect. And she was like, I sent Joel a Spurs mask. It was like, oh, I can't wait. That's outstanding. Yeah.
Hey, at least I wore it. I gave it, and it fit well too, so I'll probably wear it again.
They're great,
I don't
man.
Care.
Yeah, they are
fantastic.
Great. Yeah,
Nick, when this whole thing's over and you go to the mailbox, you'll find out too. They work pretty well.
Yeah.
So we got 2 hours in the books. We got an hour to go still of the show. Flying by, but still plenty to cover. Something on your mind you want to get off your chest? Throw it our way. 713-780-3776 HRP listener line or hit us on Twitter. The final 60 minutes just around the corner, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.